Speak, O Lord, your servants listen. Amen. Please be seated. I'm assuming that's true, right? Question. Is it possible to thwart the will of God? Is it possible to so oppose the will of God that you can actually prevent it from happening? Well, this is an ancient controversy in the church that at times has really roiled Christians and put them in solid camps against each other, because they're talking about the most important things, that is, the power of God in relation to the problems of the world. So it's not a trivial matter. On the one side are those who say that if you believe that you can thwart God's will, you are rejecting the power of God, reducing God to a mere mortal. So no, you cannot thwart the will of God. On the other side are those who believe that God's power to accomplish his will is greater than the human ability to thwart it, thus denying human freedom. That if we cannot thwart God's will, if we can't prevent God's will from happening, if we can't stop God's will, then we're not truly free. If we just end up being puppets in the hand of an all-powerful God, well, then what becomes of that desire that God has deep in God's own heart to love us and for us to love him? How many people love their puppets? Is Dave, are you saying you, yes? To love their puppets. We don't love our puppets, those of us who have them. We don't love our puppets, and our puppets don't love us, to some people's surprise. In fact, if we can't thwart the will of God, then we are puppets and we have not that most fundamental characteristic that all philosophers and theologians and just about everybody from the beginning of time has said about us. We have freedom. We are free to act, even if it means thwarting God's will. Now, our gospel lesson tackles the problem head on. It gives us two stories of healing, puts them together in a sense, and even sets them perhaps in a conflict. These two stories, in fact, are in conflict. One story is the failure of Jesus to heal. The other is the success of the disciples in healing when Jesus could not. So here, there are two stories. The first story is Jesus goes into his village, into his where he originally came from, small town perhaps, Nazareth. And the Mark tells us that he was rejected in such a powerful way that Jesus was handicapped, that he couldn't do what he's been so successful. He's been going around to all the little towns and villages around Capernaum in that area, in the northern sea of Lake Galilee. And he's become so well known and so famous, and so does everybody is after him. He has to sneak away time after time because he would have no free moment at all to pray, to do anything else, because the crowds were on him so much. They were on him so much because he was successful in his preaching. The power of his preaching was, people said it's authentic, not like the scribes and Pharisees who just kind of rattle it off without much meaning. Here, this guy preaches like he really believes it. He preaches like what he says matters for human life. Let's go follow him. And they did. Problem is that in his own hometown, it didn't work. He gets to his hometown, and Mark is a little brutal. He doesn't, you know, Matthew, Luke, and John especially, tends to kind of take the hard edges off the tough passages in the gospel. Mark doesn't. He doesn't take any edges off. He's got an edge to himself, as a matter of fact. But what he tells us is that when Jesus gets to his hometown, where his family is, he starts to heal. He goes into the synagogue and starts to teach. And immediately there is an uproar. Why is there an uproar? Why are people so angry that he has come home after being away for some time, maybe a year, maybe two, maybe three, four, five, but we don't really know. These are the sort of so-called lost years of Jesus. We don't know what he did from the time he was 12 or 13 until the time he begins his public ministry, and we know about it. But Mark tells us that Jesus, in his hometown, is rejected and humiliated. He's rejected and humiliated. Now, I'd like you to carry that around with you for a while. Bear that. As over the next few weeks, we're going to talk perhaps a little bit more about it. But in this experience of going to his hometown, what does it say? He was rejected and humiliated. This becomes kind of a centerpiece for the rest of his ministry. Now, if we look at the text, there's something quite surprising in it. It pays taking a look at it. The people say, is not this the carpenter? Well, the word that we've translated carpenter really is not very good. It's actually, he's a day laborer. That's the original meaning of this text. He was a day laborer, not a carpenter that might work in the big cities. He worked fixing people's homes, perhaps. We don't really know. But it goes on, this carpenter, and here is the zinger, the son of Mary. Now this is a scandal. When they say, who's this? Who does he think he's? He's the son of Mary. Well, can you guess why that is a terrible thing to say? You know, to be a Jew, the fundamental ground of being a Jew, you have to be what? Anybody know? You have to be the child of a Jewish mother. The descendants are matrilineal. If you're in Orthodox Judaism, we're not talking about today, except for the Orthodox today believe it and the conservatives believe it, but the rest of the Jews, particularly in America, say that anybody can become a Jew. You don't have to have this biological marker that your mother. But at the time of Jesus, you had to have your mother as a Jew. Otherwise, you were not a Jew. But that's not all. So it says son of Mary. Okay, it's admitted. Jesus is the son of Mary. He's a Jew, right? What's the problem? The problem is this. No one calls anybody by their mother's name. No one says, hi, Bill, son of Mary. You say, hi, Bill, son of Joseph. Now, was that because of a sexual gender imbalance? No, it was because when Jesus was born, there was some question about his birth. We all know this. And those questions don't go away in 10 or 20 years. They kind of find a spot in the back of, there's a certain part of the human brain, I think, that finds a spot and just waits to come out in a most unopportune time. There was a controversy about Jesus' birth. Now, we can know that a mother is giving birth because it's a very public event in the ancient world, and it's a very physical event. You can't hide a birth in a village. However, you don't always know who the father is. If you don't know who the father is, even if you know the mother makes you a Jew, the father makes you a member of the synagogue. So you can be a Jew, like Jesus is certainly a Jew, there's no question about that. But people think that Jesus does not belong in the synagogue because he is a mamzer. Anybody know what a mamzer is? Jewish word for bastard. That Jesus is a bastard. His parentage, his father was not who people said he was. And so for the townspeople, throw up in his face, hey, wait a minute, we know you. You got James, your brother, and Joseph, and Simon, and Judas, and the sisters, and oh, you son of Mary. Son of Mary. It must have hurt. It may be why Jesus left town 5 years earlier, 6 years, so whatever the time period was. It may have made him leave town because he got so sick and tired of being rejected. He couldn't go to the synagogue. Can you imagine that? He was blocked from the synagogue. He was blocked from participating in the decision-making of his village and town. He could not be a part of the minyan. He was, in effect, oh, he's a Jew, sure, yeah, that's fine, but he's not one of us. And so who does he think he is to come to us and preach? Who does he think he is to come to us and show off these healing powers? Anybody can do that. He is not one of us. And so begins the humiliation of Jesus already in the beginning. Now, when I say that he had no authority or even right in the eyes of his townfolk, even his kin rejected him. Their rejection was so powerful that Jesus found himself unable to heal and teach. It says it right in the text. Jesus could not, because of the unbelief, he couldn't do what he has already demonstrated time and time and time again that he does perfectly well, that is heal and preach and love and gather in those who are what? Rejected and humiliated. His heart is open to those who are rejected and humiliated. How? Why? Because he was rejected and humiliated in his own village. What must the disciples have thought? They've just signed on. They just become his disciples. It's only been a matter of a few months, perhaps. They were still in training. What must they have thought to see Jesus, their master, the one who they've made a vow to follow, that even his own family rejects him? Even his village, his synagogue rejects him. What are we doing following him? It raises a serious question. The disciples, the text tells us, are able to do what Jesus could not do. Did you notice that's the second story? The disciples go out into the world. They go out to the villages and towns around the Sea of Galilee. And, you know, they're interns, right? They're just starting. They're just sort of getting into it. How terrified they must have been. Jesus says, okay, go on. Go on out there. Now, don't you dare bring any money with you. Don't bring a bag. Just bring a staff. And be subject to the people in whose town or village or home you visit. Whatever they put in front of you. Now this, get this. This is really important because you know what Jewish dietary laws are, right? Jewish dietary laws are very strict. And there are some things the Jews may not eat. So Jesus is telling his disciples, now I want you to go to these villages around here. And if you watched his hand and he went like that, it meant they were going to be going to villages that were not Jewish. It meant they were going to go to villages that not only were not Jewish, were even hostile to Judaism. And that is where Jesus sends them. And then he says, whatever they put in front of you, you eat. Now that is shocking. This is an issue that separated Paul and Peter. Remember, they had a huge fight over it. Paul and Peter, they finally had to go separate ways because they were so angry with each other. That Paul said, you eat what's put in front of you. Peter says, we have dietary laws that we have to stick to. We cannot turn those over. And here it is, even before Paul and Peter ever meet, Jesus is already saying, whatever they put in front of you, you accept it with gratitude. And you open your hearts to them and they will open their hearts to you. And that's the beginning of the sharing of the gospel. And who was able to carry it out? These disciples, for whom this is all brand new. These disciples who must have been terrified to be given this task without much training. And they went out. And Mark tells us they succeeded. They succeeded where Jesus did not. They healed, what does the text say? Many. How about demons? They cast out many. When you're talking about Jesus, not so many. Not so many at all. What does this tell us? It tells us, first of all, and I think this is very important, it tells us that we should not expect to always be successful. We try, we work hard, we do our best, we want things to be better, we want things to change. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen. God wills that we not die. And yet we do die. And the people whom we love die. Is it God's will that they die? This is a conundrum that continue, and will always continue to bother the church and the faithful. This text is telling us it's not always given to us to succeed. No matter how hard, and no matter how hard we work, and no matter how faithful we are, it's not always given to us to succeed. But all we have to do is be faithful. It's not success that counts. It's faithfulness. We are to remember that God calls us and equips us to serve God by loving our neighbor, healing the sick, receiving with open hearts the stranger and the foreigner, the widow and the orphan, and to spread the good news of Jesus Christ. May it be so among us. Amen.